Hello and welcome to IVF BFF with me, Sian.
And me, Catherine.
A podcast detailing IVF in real time and shining a light on the experience of infertility.
Join us as we lift the lid and demystify all things fertility, sharing our stories, the highs and the lows, and everything in between.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. Welcome. Welcome back, everyone.
Yeah. Episode 5.
Yeah.
Halfway through the old series, technically.
Yeah, if we do a ten up again. Yeah. 10's a nice number.
10 feels good. Feng shui.
We worked it really well last time, didn't we? Because 10 was like both of our rounds ended and it was episode 10. Great.
Yeah,
like we planned it.
Speaking of, you know, rounds.
IVF.
IVF, yeah. You are, I kind of said to Catherine, oh, how are you doing before we started recording this? And you were like, yeah, not great.
Not the best.
And then you were like, I don't want to like make people depressed. And I was like,
I don't want to bum people out, guys.
Yeah.
But then again, it's IVF, so.
I mean, you know.
It's not sunshine and rainbows.
No.
The hormones are quite wild for me at the moment. Look, it's all manageable. Can cope, like it's fine, but I don't know, they make me feel rougher than, like, in some ways it's worse than the stims, because I know stims I felt very heavy, and obviously you feel heavy, you feel bloated physically, it's uncomfortable. But I never got mad side effects from stims. That was the thing, all the way I was, you know, walking the dog, and I'm still doing that now. But the side effects from this, I'm on Progynova, it's day 11 of Progynova, I think. Yeah. And the side effects are more intense, I would say. Just, you know, feeling so tired. So tired. Just tired and emotional, really. and just feeling a bit rough. You know, but look, this is IVF, this is hormones, this is medication, and it comes and goes, and I, as I say, it's all manageable. I'm still doing my job, I'm still up and about, and you know, it is fine, but it's just a bit like, ugh. It's that feeling, it's almost like when you're kind of hungover. Obviously I'm not hungover, I've not had alcohol in a long time now, well, a little while, yeah, quite a long time. But it's kind of that feeling of like when something's weighing on you. But obviously I'm not hungover, it's just IVF. But it feels a bit like that.
Very intense. Yeah.
Yes, it is. But I've got a scan tomorrow.
At 9 a.m.
At 9 a.m.
Early.
Woohoo! Mm. I like the early appointments because you don't have to wait a whole day to go and find out what's going on. I mean, look, I've never been in for a scan at ACU and they've said, oh yeah, everything looks good, let's do the thing now. It's always been like, come back tomorrow, or come back in 2 days, come back in 3 days or whatever. And I've always needed multiple scans. But people are telling me that Progynova and a medicated frozen embryo transfer is meant to be quite effective. It's meant to do the job. So I'm hoping I'm going to go in, they're going to be like, bam, and just book me a little transfer. That'd be nice.
So
I can get an MB back.
Please, come on, guys. When is the sort of, if that all goes ahead and we pray that it does, what's the timeline then for transfer?
I think they will, if it looks good tomorrow, I think they'll send me home and start me on progesterone that evening.
Yeah.
And then I think it's 5 days after you start taking progesterone that you have a transfer, I think.
But so Monday, bank holiday. Yeah,
could be Monday. And the clinic do them on a bank holiday Monday. But then again, this is what I said. I was like, will they do it on a bank holiday? And the nurse said before, if they don't, she said they should do, but sometimes they go, oh, we're fully booked or whatever. Or, you know, if there's a problem, they'll start me on progesterone a day later.
Right.
And then I think I take both estrogen and progesterone till transfer, I think. I don't know, I've got to ask that, or whether it's just progesterone. Yeah. But surely you need you the estrogen.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'd better ask that, actually. But I'm sure they'll tell me.
Oh, they will.
So, yeah, if all looks good, we could be looking at next Monday or Tuesday for a transfer, an embryo transfer. And then
the two-week wait, even though it's not quite 2 weeks, but you know what I mean? It's the...
Yes, the 11 wait. Days. I think it's 11 days post-transfer. So
yeah.
Do your maths, guys, and think of me on those days.
Oh, we will. And
if it all goes all right, you know.
It does sound like it's quite... It's more likely to be okay than not, it sounds like.
I think so. Yeah. I think there's more chance of it going ahead than last time, which obviously didn't go ahead.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, it's all right. It's okay. And yeah, hopefully now we're going to time travel into the future and send you a little, pop in here, a little snippet. I'm going to try and record something like voice memo wise about the scan, because we'd normally do this podcast record after the fact, maybe towards the end of a week, maybe a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to a wedding this weekend, so I cannot record. So we're doing it a little bit earlier, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. So we thought what would be quite nice, it's almost a bit like one of our voice notes. So it's almost as if the listeners are now...
Oh, God.
Is on the
partial to our long voice notes.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like an immersive experience.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to take you into the room with me, obviously.
No.
But, yeah, I might just, like, voice a few little thoughts about how it went, and we'll try and pop that in here. And then, yes, the interview you're going to hear, again, is just Sian, because, again, time travelling to the future, I'm going to be at this wedding. And we've got a really cool guest, haven't we, Sian?
Yeah, we've got Jen, who specialises in sort of yoga and Pilates to help people going through their fertility treatment. She actually has a program that I've tried it, actually, it has different sort of videos, different types of yoga practices and breath work, etc., for different points in your IVF.
Or
natural cycle as well. She's Australian cool. as well.
Yes, hence why as well we're a bit more limited with, obviously, with when we can record, because she's in Oz.
Yeah.
And so I'm letting Sian fly solo on this one.
Yeah.
Whilst I'm recovering after the wedding on Saturday night, but I won't be, because I'm not drinking at this wedding.
No, you'll be fresh as a daisy, except for the hormone hangover, I should
think. Oh, yeah, hormone hangover. But it's the kind of wedding where everyone's staying down there.
Like,
nice. We're all staying for the whole weekend. And so on Sunday morning, I'm going to wake up feeling smug.
Oh, you will.
And everyone else is going to be hungover, so yay.
And also you get to laugh at everybody from the night before and be like, you could scare people and go, ooh, do you not remember what you said?
What you did? Yeah. Yeah, give them the fear. Although I will be dancing, I'll still be throwing some shapes on the dance floor.
But yeah, so that's why the ep is a little bit higgledy-piggledy, but I think you still get a lot out of it. So
yeah, we're doing a bit of time travel this week, guys, so I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, that's it, really. Yeah. Enjoy the interview.
Enjoy.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, I am sat in my car, ready to drive home after my scan. It all went well. My lining is 9.5 millimetres, so thick enough, and no follicles growing. So woohoo, we are ready for a transfer. Now, a couple of little, it'll be fine, a couple of little glitches with the booking in. So first of all, normally they'd send me home and start me on progesterone tonight, and a transfer is normally 5 days after you start taking progesterone. However, 5 days time from now is Bank Holiday Monday. It is possible, but they are fully booked for transfers on Monday, so it won't be on Monday. It's likely to be Tuesday. So I start progesterone tomorrow, and that's the two pessaries a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. And I do that alongside estrogen. So I'm on a double whammy of the tablets. And if all goes well, I will carry on with both those medications up until, I think they said, 8 weeks into pregnancy. I really liked that the nurse said, she said, you'll start your progesterone, keep taking the estrogen, and then when pregnant, you keep taking them. She said when and not if, and I really like that. I'm like, yeah, when pregnant, thank you. So yes, hopefully Tuesday transfer. Not Monday. The other slight glitch is, so I'm walking back to my car and then I get a call from ACU saying, oh, we do need to see Carl. I said, we need to see him in ACU. And I was like, oh, why? And she said, well, we've not seen him since February. I don't take him to my appointments because to me, they're just routine and standard. And yeah, I had no idea that he hadn't been in for that long and that they needed to see him. They said, we always, for each treatment cycle, we always need to make sure that each partner is on board, so they need to chat to Carl to make sure that, like, he's still up for this and that I've not split up with him and I'm using his embryos. And I said that to him and I explained it, and he was like, I signed a form to say that you can use the embryos if we split up. And he said, no, that's if I die, sorry, got that wrong. So if he dies, I can use the embryos. But if we split up, I don't think I could. So yeah, they need to just check in with him, see him in person, make sure he's on board. So naturally, I'm like, right, when can you go in? Because they won't book a transfer and give us a time until they have seen Carl. Carl is in the area where the hospital is because he's working. And he's like, yeah, I can go this afternoon. I'm like, go now. Why can't you go now? And he's like, well, I can go in 2 hours time. And he's like, yeah, 2 or 3 hours time. And he's like, I'm sure it'll be fine. But it just makes me laugh because obviously, you know, there's clearly the hormones are making me more agitated for it. And he's like, it will be fine. He's like, I'm busy now, but I can go just after lunchtime. So yeah, he's going to pop along. I've got a blood test booked for the Tuesday morning, early, 8:40, for progesterone to check my levels. If it's too low, they will give me extra progesterone injections. Also, I've got an acupuncture appointment booked in for Tuesday, which should land between blood test and transfer. And I'd like to do that because I'd like to get there on the day of, if I can. Doesn't, I know it's probably not the clincher, but there we go. That's just something I'd like to do because I didn't get to do it last time. So yeah, it's all go, just a couple more boxes to tick. But hopefully we should be looking towards a transfer on Tuesday.
So we are very excited to have Jen here from Element Pilates and Yoga. And yeah, how are you doing? You're all the way in Sydney right now, aren't you?
I am. It's so lovely to connect with you, Sian, from literally the other side of the world. So thanks for having me.
What time is it there?
7 o'clock in the evening.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, 7 o'clock. My gosh. Yeah, thank you so much. So I guess one of the things that I found was when I was going through this horrific time was I saw your posts on Instagram and I thought, wow, a yoga teacher who is kind of felt quite no nonsense, who felt quite grounded. I personally love yoga. I love practicing. And I have often found that whenever I have spoken to yogis, a lot of them kind of said some quite like some phrases that I found really hard, kind of like, you know, well, you know, you just need to believe, and what won't, you know, what was it? What won't, what's for you won't pass you by. And, you know, like, oh, well, you know, if you manifest and if you, you know, think, but I always felt from seeing your posts and seeing, I was like, wow, you're kind of different in your approach. And that might be because of your story. But yeah, tell us a bit about yourself. And yeah,
thanks, Sian. It's so funny you say that, because a lot of people say that to me. They're like, yo, you're not like a lot of yoga teachers I've met before. And I suppose a lot of it does come from my own story, but I think that a lot of it comes from, I wasn't always a yoga teacher. I have an exercise science background. I was a clinical Pilates teacher for a very long time, and I still am. But I kind of fell into yoga because it helped me so much on my own fertility journey. And when I went and retrained as a yoga teacher and wanted to incorporate those skills into my work, I was pretty blown away at a lot of the benefits from a scientific perspective. And yes, one of the things that we all love about yoga is the kind of the woo-woo side, and it gets a bit spiritual. And look, I'm down for all of that. But for me, what really drew me in was looking at studies and research and how yoga can have a physiological effect on the body and how it can help you when you are struggling with things like fertility and loss. And you know, yoga is one of those very few complementary therapies that has been studied extensively in Western medicine. So there's a lot of research and a lot of data out there to show you what happens to your body physiologically when you are using something like yoga over a long period of time. And I remember just going through some of these studies and doing some research, like, well, it's just such an obvious thing to help me through my time where I was struggling through IVF. But I didn't really put two and two together until I fell pregnant naturally. So that was kind of the turning point for me. I was like, yes, there is something here that I need to learn a lot more about.
Oh, okay. Well, before we go on to kind of all of the kind of science behind it, and obviously it's amazing that you've got a background in something, you know, like that. What was it? Science? What was your...
Exercise science.
Exercise science. So that's brilliant that you've kind of got that grounding. What was your journey like? What happened, if you don't mind sharing?
No, of course I don't mind sharing. Look, it's a long journey, but I will keep it as succinct as I can. So I got married when I was 33. My God, I just skipped a decade there. Sorry. I was 33 when I got married, and my husband and I wanted to have a family. So we were really excited. We started trying straight away. I had been on hormonal birth control for many years, and when I came off birth control, my cycle never returned. And I remember after about sort of 3 or 4 months, I remember going back to my gynecologist, and she said, look, it's not unusual. These things kind of happen. It can take some women a little bit longer to kind of, you know, get their bodies back into that normal rhythm. And I thought, all right, cool. I won't worry too much. I mean, I worked in the fitness industry. I was healthy. Like we didn't have any health issues that to speak of. So we were not really worried. And then it got to 6 months, and then it got to 12 months, and still no sign of my period returning. And we started to get a little bit worried. We went down the kind of natural route. I remember I saw an acupuncturist. I tried a few herbs and a few different supplements. Nothing seemed to make any difference. And eventually my gynecologist referred us to a fertility doctor. And this was probably about 18 months after I had gone off birth control. And he ran a few tests. And I remember he called us back into his office a couple of days later. And we were sitting across from him, and he just pushed this piece of paper in front of me, and I had no idea what I was looking at. And he said, I think you've gone through early menopause. And if you want to have a baby, IVF is probably your only option, and you need to do it immediately. And I was devastated, to put it lightly. You know, it's the last thing that you want to hear when, gosh, I guess I was 34 by this stage, and I'd always been healthy otherwise. I had no, you know, my mum had gone through menopause at a normal age. I didn't think that would, it didn't even cross my mind. So, but we, at the same time, we're like, okay, well, we've never actually been able to try. So here is something we can try. So we went straight to IVF, and my body didn't respond to the meds at all. So I think it was about 2 weeks I was injecting very, very high dose stims, and my hormone levels didn't rise even a tiny bit. So sadly, that cycle was cancelled, and we were left in this very dire place where we thought, well, that's kind of it for us. You know, IVF isn't an option. What else is there? And I had a few friends who had had success with a particular fertility doctor. So I decided to just take a little bit of a step back. I worked with a wonderful naturopath for a few months, and she said, look, I've seen this before. Look, you might be in menopause, you might not be. I think there's a few things we can try naturally. So I did that with her for a few months. And then I did another round with a different fertility doctor, and similar start, things were not looking good, but eventually I did start to respond to the meds, and we ended up collecting 3 eggs during that cycle, which I thought was amazing compared to the previous one.
Yeah.
But only one egg was mature and only one fertilized. And so I remember I got that call the next day, and you just think, oh, you know, your chances go from 3 to 1. And then, you know, in an instant that one doesn't have a very likely chance of success. But it did. And that little embryo made it all the way. And my beautiful little girl is 6 and a half. And that was my first journey.
Wow.
And it was, you know, pretty pretty remarkable that I went, you know, in the space of about 6 months, I was told, you know, you've gone through menopause to I got a positive pregnancy test. And, you know, it was meant to be. My husband and I are both only children, and we had always decided we wanted more than one child. I'd have another 10 kids if I could, but you know, we always wanted to have 2 children.
It's funny how your expectations suddenly really adjust when you're going through it. You know, you're like, actually just the one is absolutely would be magic, you know. Yeah.
Is that, you know, all of your expectations and your dreams just kind of go just completely off to another. It's like, you know, you're living a different life, but you know, that's okay. And so we thought, look, we'll give it a year or so, and then we'll go back to IVF straight away. So I breastfed my daughter for about a year, and then the most amazing thing happened. After I stopped breastfeeding, my cycle returned. Just one day, went to the bathroom, and there was my period. And I was a bit suspicious at first. I thought, this is too good to be true. But no, came back the next month, and the next month I started to ovulate regularly. My cycle was probably on the shorter side, but it was there. So I went to a new doctor who said, look, your hormone levels aren't great for your age, but look, you're ovulating regularly. There's no reason to not try naturally. So we were like, this is the thing we were waiting for, the first journey, and we can finally, it's going to be so easy this time. I'm so excited. Sadly, that was not how things worked out. And this journey ended up being a lot longer and a lot more difficult than the first one.
No, I'm so sorry. So,
Sian, gosh, it's okay. It is my journey, and it's brought me to where I am. So it is what it is. So we tried for about 6 months at home. And I was, how old was I by this stage? Probably 37. And I thought, look, we don't want to leave it too long without sort of knowing that we could be doing more. So we went back to the doctor, and she agreed to try a few ovulation induction rounds. I think we did about 6 rounds of letrozole. Again, nothing really happened. So she said, let's do some further testing. And then we found out I had a thyroid condition. My fallopian tubes were partially blocked. My AMH levels were basically zero. And somehow my husband ended up with some male factor infertility issues.
My God. So you've got it all there.
It all. And on top of this, I developed chronic insomnia. Like, it was just month after month, I couldn't sleep. So they put me on so many hormones to try and get me to ovulate. I was on progesterone to support my cycle. I was on thyroid meds to help my thyroid. I was taking 2 types of sleeping tablets to get a few hours sleep at night. I was a mess, to put it lightly.
Yeah. Like,
no surprise I wasn't falling pregnant, right? Looking back at it in hindsight. And so with all of this going on, my doctor said, look, if you want another baby, just go back to IVF. And we thought, look, it worked last time. It's not what we wanted. We're so disappointed. But look, let's just do it and it's done. We can put this behind us and move on.
Mm.
And then I had one of those cycles that was perfect on paper. My hormone levels were great. I responded really well to the meds. We got 3 eggs again, but this time we got 2 embryos, and they were both really beautiful grays. They were perfect little embryos. We transferred both. And then the day before we went into lockdown over COVID, I found out that I wasn't pregnant. Mm. So neither of those embryos had stuck. And then my doctor called me the next day and said, look, I want to get you in for a follow-up appointment, but I can't because the clinic has to shut down. Throughout 2020, all of the clinics in the world pretty much closed during COVID. So we were devastated. We thought this was like, we had 2 embryos and they were perfect. Like, how could this not have worked? Mm. And we thought that was it. And yes, I had this beautiful daughter who was, you know, 2 at the time. And I thought we couldn't be any luckier to have her. But all I wanted in the world was to just complete my family and move on with my life.
Yeah.
This was probably my lowest point. I remember just nights of crying on the bathroom floor, just pumped full of hormones, complete wreck. Nothing had worked, coupled with all of the, what's the word for it? Everything that comes along with secondary infertility, the guilt, the shame, all of, you know, wanting more than what you already have. It was a really hard time.
And COVID on top of that.
Then
as
there
well.
Was COVID, and I was living overseas. It was horrible. Oh. I couldn't see my family for about 2 years because I was living out of Australia. I had a friend who I used to work with in Sydney, and I remember I was chatting to her on Facebook one day, and she said, "Look, Jen, I know what you've just been through, and look, I don't want to overstep, but I have a friend who teaches fertility yoga. Would you be interested in me putting her in touch with you?" And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I've just been through IVF. Look, what is a bit of yoga going to do? But I had tried everything. And I mean everything, like the 50,000 supplements, the acupuncture, the massage, the hypnosis, that you name it. I thought, look, I'll give it a go. And I'm in lockdown. I can't go to work. I've got nothing else to do. What have I got to lose? And it was honestly, Sean, the one thing I hadn't thought to do throughout this entire, how many years was it by now? And that was to slow down. And instead of just being like, let's go, what can we do? What's the next treatment? What's the next test? Tell me the answer. It just gave me this chance to stop and to ask my body what I needed. And I hadn't even considered that I should do that on this journey. It was such a foreign concept to me. So I started this yoga practice and I loved it for no reason other than it made me feel peaceful. And then little things started to shift. I remember I would get up in the morning and I would feel lighter. Like this sense of dread had kind of lifted. I think I was probably a lot nicer to my husband, a lot nicer to live with. I felt more present with my daughter. It was this horrible feeling of, you know, being with her and wanting this and wanting that, but I just really felt I could be with her. And then bigger things started to shift. I remember I woke up one morning and I had had a full night's sleep. For some reason, my insomnia just disappeared. It just went away. And that was the last time I took a sleeping tablet. And then my thyroid started to heal and I hadn't changed my meds. I hadn't changed anything else in my life. And then in July of 2020, I fell pregnant naturally. Wow. And that was the biggest shock of all. And to, like, we were blown away, to put it lightly. And I raced to the doctor. We got our, you know, hormone testing done. Everything was looking great. I went back a couple of days later. All my levels were rising. We were so excited. We were like, our journey is finally over. We can put this behind us. And sadly, we lost that baby at 8 weeks.
So devastating. I'm so
Thank
sorry.
Thank you, my love. Aww. Thank you. And I was absolutely devastated. And don't get me wrong, this was a really, really hard time. But there was something at the back of my mind. I was like, hang on. I've just been through how many tens of thousands of dollars of treatments. I was told by doctors I had like a 5% chance of IVF working, yet I fell pregnant on my own. I wanted to learn more. I was like, there is something here. I need to learn more about this. Give me the info. So I went back into my crazy type A mode of doing things and I went and retrained as a yoga teacher and I learned about why it had such a huge impact on my body. So I started employing all of those principles into my life. And then I fell pregnant again at the end of that year. And that little boy is 3. So wow. That's my journey, and that's why I do the work that I do, and that's what brings me here today.
Wow. My gosh, I feel like you've experienced it all, you know.
We did some stuff. There was a lot there.
Yeah, I bet. Oh my gosh, what a journey. And so, wow, that's kind of just changed your life. So that's what made you become a yoga teacher, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It did change my life. And I do still teach Pilates and I do a lot of, you know, pre and postnatal rehab work. But I just thought there is so much here that I can offer to women. And when you think about exercise and, you know, mind-body support on this journey, there's not much around. There's a lot of exercise when it comes to pregnancy and postpartum, but for women who are trying to conceive, I mean, gosh, the physical impact of fertility treatments on the body is really overwhelming, and it's really hard to know what you should be doing at different times of your cycle and treatment cycles. So that's what I thought, there's just something here. So that's what led me to creating my business.
That's amazing. And I guess in terms of taking it back to the sort of science side, you know, what kind of things did you find out in terms of it supporting people perhaps physically and emotionally through the IVF process or even trying to conceive, you know, naturally?
Mm. Oh, gosh, where do I start? I think the biggest thing for me personally, and what I see with you know, hundreds of students that I've worked with, I think it really comes back to this ability to regulate your nervous system. And that for me was a game changer, because when you go into it in a little bit more detail, you look at what happens to your body when you're stressed. And I think that that's a very important place to start, because, you know, people say, oh, you know, you just need to relax. You just need to stop stressing. That's going to help you. And you think, are you actually kidding me? Like, I am draining my bank account. I'm pumping my body full of hormones. My relationship is a wreck. I don't know if my friends are going to talk to me again because I'm being so horrible to. Like, your life is so incredibly stressful. There's not a single part of your life that isn't affected by fertility struggles. So being told to just relax is the stupidest thing you can possibly tell someone.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, your body needs to feel that sense of safety and regulation in order to function properly. So when you're stressed, and I just want everyone who is listening to know that stress is not an emotion. It's not something that we feel like we feel joy or sadness or fear. It is a physiological response that your body has to perceived danger. So, you know, you can be going about your day and, you know, you're walking across the road, suddenly a car comes out of nowhere, your stress response kicks in, you do what you can, you jump out of the way, you run across the road to get out of oncoming traffic, and then you go back into, okay, the threat is gone, I can continue and I can go about my day. Back in the day when we were not living in our modern world, we would encounter things like, I don't know, a saber-toothed tiger was coming along to eat our family. So we'd have to get into that fight or flight mode, save ourselves. And then once the threat had passed, we'd go on about our day. So that's how stress is supposed to work. Your brain goes, oh, there's a threat. Let's respond. Threat's gone. Let's move on. But the problem with things like fertility struggles is that the threat never goes away. And the problem is that your brain doesn't understand that there's a difference between there's a tiger over there that's about to come and eat my family, or I'm terrified that this next embryo transfer isn't going to be successful. Because last time it wasn't successful, my husband and I had a huge fight and I cried for days. I couldn't go to work. I couldn't spend time with my family, my friends. I felt so isolated. Your brain, that's horribly difficult and really threatening position for your body to be in. And your brain is like, well, we can't let that happen again. We need to go into this fight or flight mode.
Mm.
But the problem is you can't fight infertility. You can't run away from it. We think we can fight it a little bit. We go into this super control mode and we do all the things that we think we can to try and control it. But at the end of the day, these things have a huge impact. So that's where practices like yoga come in. Because when you are in fight or flight, your brain says, what do I need right now? I need my legs to run. I need my arms to fight. whatever else. But what I don't need is digestion. I don't need to digest my lunch because I'm running for my life. I don't need to solve a really difficult maths equation. So I'm going to switch off that critical thinking, that frontal, prefrontal cortex part of the brain. So that kind of like, you know, that brain fog that we get, that, you know, you just can't really get the words out, you can't focus properly, you know, that part of your brain goes offline. And the other things that you don't need when you are in a state of hypervigilance is your immune system. So you don't need to fight off a virus, you know, if you are running for your life. The other thing that you don't need is reproduction. So your body is going to take as many resources away from all of these parts of the body that it can and send them towards those big global muscles in your arms and your legs. And this is okay if the threat lasts for a few seconds or a few minutes. But if you are chronically stressed time after time, month after month, year after year, it has a huge impact on your body, your overall health and your fertility. And you see things like, I see this all the time with my students. They'll come to me and they'll say, look, I used to have a 28-day cycle. I would ovulate in the middle. Things were super predictable. I had no PMS. And then 2 years into their fertility journey, their cycle is all over the place. They've got short luteal phases. They've got on and ovulatory cycles. They've got awful PMS, mood swings. And it is so many times put down to these increases in cortisol and adrenaline levels where it's completely disrupted the beautiful and delicate balance of hormones that is required for healthy ovulation. So does that make sense? That's me rambling a lot about stress.
No. I think that's fair.
So it is fair, isn't it? And when you think about everything that you go through when you are struggling to conceive, you think, well, it's no wonder that everything else in my life becomes so difficult. So we need to find a way to counter this. And that's where practices like yoga, meditation, and breath work can have a huge impact. And we can talk about, you know, how you can implement them and how often and how those practices work. But you do need to do something in order to bring your brain back into a place where it goes, actually, I'm okay. And there isn't a threat. And things can operate as per normal. We can slow down. And that is an incredible gift that you can give to yourself.
Yeah, I think I definitely, and I'm sure lots of people listening can resonate with the, right, I need to fix something now, you know, when they're going through this time. And it's so hard to just calm and to, you know, take the time for yourself. I actually don't think, so, you know, you feel a lot of the time quite lost, and I guess you don't even have a starting place. Is there any advice you could give to anyone who may be listening who is in the absolute pits of the worst sort of places? You can, obviously you've been there, that maybe just little things that might help them to help.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A couple of things. The first is that you should start small, because when you have been in this prolonged state of hypervigilance or fight or flight, it's, you know, you can't sit down for an hour and meditate. Like, that's not what your body is going to respond to. Because when you've been on the go and your body is so activated and there's so much energy and so much adrenaline pumping, telling your body that I have to just sit down and meditate is probably the last thing you're going to be able to do. And if you think about it, you know, that state of stillness, if you are running from a tiger and you were like, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to sit down right now and meditate for a few minutes. Your brain would be screaming at you, like, get up, run, go, like, get out of here. So your brain needs to find other ways to come into that sense of safety first. So what I like to do with my students is move your body. That's where yoga comes into it, because it is a movement practice. I mean, there's a lot of different types of yoga, but there's really wonderful ways that we can start to get people into their body and really connecting with your body as well, which is, I'm sure, so many people can relate to. The journey of trying to conceive and struggling through fertility really just takes you away from your body, doesn't it? It takes all of your power away. We're told by doctors, this is that, and these are your stats, and these are your likelihood of things being successful, and we're poked and prodded and given procedures and surgeries, and you're like, this body is not my body anymore. So being able to come back to a place of knowing how you feel and knowing what emotions are in different places within your body and how that's showing up for you and how that's affecting you sounds a little bit woo, but it's actually incredibly empowering to be able to just go, okay, here's where I'm feeling heavy today, and here's how I need to move that energy away from that space. So things like yoga are amazing. I love to tell every single one of my students to go for a walk outside every single day, if they can, weather permitting at different places in the world, of course.
Yeah, London's not always so great with that.
It's not. January in London, probably not. Some of my Canadian students would also laugh at me for telling them that. So you do need to find ways of dispersing that energy. So it's a really important thing to get that underway first. And then we can start to say, okay, well, we've moved some of that energy around. Now can we come to a place of stillness? And how does that feel? And maybe it doesn't feel good. Maybe we start with 5 minutes. We just take a few moments, place hands on our belly, take a few big breaths, and get into the habit of asking your body how she feels. This is a bit of a woo-woo story, but I just want to quickly give you an example. So I was not a woo-woo person. I hated yoga. I thought it was weird. I was like, can we do push-ups? Why are we lying around on pillows? This is super boring. But after my last round of IVF wasn't successful and I started my yoga practice, my teacher got me to put my hands on my belly, close my eyes, breathe. And she said, I want you to ask your body if there's anything that she wants you to know. I was like, bit weird. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I did. And I can't even tell you, Sean, like clear as day, the loudest words you can imagine came into my head, said, you never gave me a chance. Oh. And then it was gone. That was it. Burst out crying, tears everywhere. Mm. And my body was absolutely right. And sometimes you get these incredible moments of insight like that, that make you realize that you're on the right path. Mm. So that would be my advice to anyone who is absolutely in the depths of despair. Start small, move your body first, and then come into stillness.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think that's such a, I mean, obviously that particular thing isn't going to get you pregnant, but
I wish if I had a magic wand. I know. My goodness.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. But I mean, that is going to be useful for anyone who is going through a really tough time. I was going to ask, because there will be some people listening, and this is probably a whole other tangent that we can go on, but in terms of yoga, you know, people throw that word around and they don't really know what that is. You see people online who can move in these really incredible, flexible positions, and you're like, well, that's not for me. I just wondered if you could just very briefly explain what that practice looks like, and maybe how often, you know, perhaps when you build to it, how often one might want to introduce it.
So fertility yoga is not some fancy new form of yoga that I invented or that anyone else invented. It is not so different to what you might see at a yoga studio. However, the beautiful thing about fertility yoga is that we change the practices to match each phase of the menstrual cycle. So for example, during your period where your energy and your hormone levels are at their lowest, this is a time for rest. This is not a time to be like getting up at 5 a.m., going to the gym, pumping your body as hard as you possibly can. No, this is a time to just lay around on pillows in a beautiful practice we call restorative yoga. It literally is laying around on pillows. It's heavenly.
My husband loves that one, by the way. Oh, I've had him do it.
The best.
He goes, can we do that yoga?
Look, I'm down for it. And I didn't learn about cycle syncing until I was in my late 30s, and I felt really ripped off when I learned about it, because when I then started my yoga practice and learned about cycle syncing and what my body needed at each phase of my cycle, it's like, this makes such incredible sense. How did I never learn this? Why were we not taught this at school? And I was, you know, worked in the fitness industry. I was working out every day of my life. And I have no doubt that contributed to my fertility struggles later on. So we rest during our period, And then as we move into the follicular phase, where our energy levels and our hormone levels are starting to rise, we then start to work with that energy. We build some more heat, some more intensity through our practices. So you're going to see a lot more sort of standing poses, a lot more warrior poses there, where we then start to move up and down from the floor to standing in a more of a vinyasa style. So that really beautiful flowing, deep breaths, everything moves along with breath. It's one of my most favorite practices where we get to just continually move the body. And then ovulation is like the peak of your cycle. So your hormone levels are at their highest. Your energy levels should be at their highest. If your libido isn't increasing at this stage, we know that there is perhaps a little bit of a disconnect, and we want to be sort of looking back at what we were doing during our period, and maybe we were pushing ourselves too much before we were ready. So that's where we want to really work with that beautiful increase of energy, and then start to bring everything down, start to support a really strong, healthy ovulation. And then we get into the luteal phase, or the 2-week wait. And that's where hopefully you're pregnant, but if you're not, your hormone levels are going to be starting to drop and your body is getting ready to bleed again. So in both of those scenarios, we need to scale back the practice and come into some more gentle work. So it's more like slow flow, more restorative as well. We aren't lying around as much as we do during our period, but it's a lot gentler. So that's how the practice kind of comes together. And I just find when you can start to lean in to what your body needs and really listen to your body, it starts to become really intuitive and really kind of joyful to think, well, I don't have to go and deadlift my body weight today because I don't feel like it. And there's a reason for that. And I think that it does a big disservice to women being told that you can train, pop in a tampon, take some painkillers and just go, no, I feel like we need to lean into rest a lot more than we have been taught. So
yeah,
there are no crazy handstands. There are no pretzel poses. I think there's nothing wrong with any of that, but that isn't fertility yoga. This is about supporting and nourishing your body.
Right. Okay. That's really helpful for people to know. And I know that you also do breath work as well. And how can that maybe help? You know, I know that you mentioned about stillness and, you know, being calm and coming back to yourself, but I know that whenever I've done some breath work, sometimes it can be quite full on, can't it? Yeah.
So breath work is a very broad umbrella term for many, many styles of breath. You know, there are functional breathing practices that we do to help people increase their VO2 max and their lung capacity and things like that. And then there are a lot of those yogic pranayama breath techniques that you might have seen in classes, like Nadi Shodhana, where you close one nostril at a time, or the breath of fire, where you're like pumping your stomach and breathing really fast.
Yeah.
That's it. And then, so I like to use breath work for two different reasons mostly. The first is to elicit that calming response, to bring the parasympathetic nervous system online, which is your rest and digest state, where the brain goes, there's nothing to stress about. Everything can carry on business as usual. Fertility gets to be prioritized once again. Bringing yourself into a state of calm is incredibly important. And your breath is the only connection that you have between your body and your autonomic nervous system. So you can't control your stress response. You know, when your brain perceives danger, automatically your body will go into fight or flight. You have no control over that, but you can override it with your breath. So if you slow down your breathing, especially your exhale, you can start to do that for at least a minute or two. Your brain will recognize that it doesn't need to be in fight or flight. So that's very, very powerful. So I love using breath work to help find that calming, really gentle and soothing response. So that's important. The other side of breath work, so people, it has been around for many, many centuries, but more recently, this more transformational or rebirthing breath work, I think is a lot of times it's called, this much more activating style has become popular, where you see people screaming and crying and having these like huge, transcendental, is that a word, experiences. So I teach that kind of breath work as well. I think it is incredibly powerful, and it helps you work through a lot of what you have been through and releases a lot of stored trauma within your body. There's a lot of ways it does that. It is quite scientific, but it's a way of putting your body into a controlled stress response while you are in a physically safe environment with a practitioner who, you know, knows how to look after you. And when you put your body into a safe place, but then start to activate that stress response, your brain goes, okay, well, I actually am safe. So everything that this stress response is bringing up, I can let go of. So then people get these crazy experiences where their bodies are writhing around and they're screaming and crying. And
I have experienced
it all. Yeah. You did? Yeah. It's wild, isn't it? It's like you're on drugs.
Yeah, I thought I was like having an ecstasism. Like that's how it felt.
And I hear this all the time.
It was just unbelievable. I mean, I honestly, but like I felt so much better afterwards. There was like all of this kind of stuff that I've clearly been, I think, suppressing for a very long time. And then I was, it felt out of body. But afterwards, I remember being like, wow, I just wailed.
You did.
What?
You did. You let go of whatever was ready to go.
Yeah. And you do feel a lot better after.
Yes. And it really has to be in the right environment with quite a skilled teacher. That you like, it's not something that I would recommend that you just, you know, go off and do on the internet. You really do need to work with someone who can guide you through it and, you know, explain if those things happen, you can kind of, you know, help them understand why. But I think for people who are going through infertility and loss, those sort of practices are so, so valuable. So that is the wide range of breath work that we can discover as well.
That's so interesting. And I'm guessing that might be a practice that you don't do when you're actually going through treatment. Maybe after, I don't know, in a period of break.
It isn't something that I let my... It really depends. I won't let my students do that kind of... practice during the 2-week wait. If there's any chance that you're pregnant, that's a hard no, because we just don't know what kind of impact it would have on, and no one's going to be the test subject, right? So that's just a no. I don't recommend it during fertility treatments. If you are going through any kind of stimulated cycles, then absolutely not, because there is already so much additional stress put on the body by those hormones. So it's something that I love to do during your period. Is a really good time to do this kind of work. Even though it is kind of physically demanding, but not, it's not like you're running a marathon. It's physically demanding in a different way. And I think that women's intuition is quite heightened. And, you know, if I can be a little bit of a woo-woo yogi for a moment, I think that a lot of the chakra centers and all of the energy channels are flowing a little bit more freely during your period, because it's sort of really good. Like, there's something very primal about being a woman when you've got your period. So it's a good time to do it. And then during your follicular and ovulatory phases as well is a really good time. But then if there's any chance you're pregnant, I would definitely avoid it.
Right. No, that makes sense. I was going to say, for somebody who perhaps their cycles are all over the place, what kind of, where should they start in terms of, those sort of parts of their cycle? I remember you were kind of talking about the follicular and what if they don't know? Mm. What should they do?
That is a big question. And I work with a lot of students who have PCOS and also hypothalamic amenorrhea. So they've had a missing period for many reasons in many years. And there's a couple of things that we need to do in that situation. Obviously, if it is something like PCOS or HA, then there are a lot of nutritional supports that you can look into, and working with that kind of practitioner is a really, really good thing to do. But in terms of a yoga practice, we need a combination of kind of waking up that connection between the brain and the ovaries again. Mm. So we need to do some of those more energetic practices to get blood flowing, because we know that blood is your body's delivery system for nutrients and for hormones. So without good and adequate blood flow, all of those hormones are not going to go to where they need to be. So we need to do that, but at the same time, we need to pair them with more gentle and restorative work. So your body knows that it is safe and it feels safe to ovulate. I should point out that the stress hormone cortisol is made from the same, it's called a precursor hormone, pregnenolone, that makes progesterone. So pregnenolone, if it is making heaps and heaps of cortisol, it doesn't have much left over to make progesterone. And as we all know, we need progesterone for healthy ovulation, a healthy luteal phase, and for implantation. So if you are chronically stressed and you see that your cycle is going haywire, it often is that imbalance of cortisol that has had a big effect on that. There are lots of things that contribute to it, but that is one that I see a lot and that has a lot of research to back it up as well. So yes, we need that balance of energetic practices with more calming ones, but this is something you probably really need to work with someone closely on so they can guide you through. I say to my students, try to come to your mat 3 times a week, and then on the other days, you can do it every day if you have the time and you the inclination, but on the other days, just where can you carve out a few moments of slow deep breathing, 10 minutes of meditation. I have a lot of guided meditations I give my students so they can relax before they go to bed. But you need to find ways to constantly remind your body that it is safe throughout this process. It's not going to be a one and done thing. It's not like going to the gym and expecting to have a six pack the next day. It's going to be consistency over a long period of time.
Right. Okay. No, that's really helpful. And in terms of, because obviously you're all the way in Sydney, so how does it work? Because there might be people who go, oh, I'm quite interested in this. Yeah.
So I work almost exclusively online. I do run some workshops in Sydney when I can, but about 90% of my students live overseas. So I work with women in 6 different continents, and a small percentage of those are in Australia and an even smaller percentage in Sydney. So I don't really want to give COVID too many, you know, claps on pats on the back, but one thing it did give us was that it gave us this connection all over the world really easily. So, you know, we went from connecting in person to connecting over Zoom overnight. And I think that's one thing that has really surprised me in terms of how well it worked, because I never in a million years thought I'd be teaching online. I always worked in studios and I still do, but this ability to connect with people around the world has been a huge game changer. And there's something very specific about your fertility journey where you don't always want to go into a studio. I mean, you don't always want to have to be, you know, showing up and talking to people. Sometimes you just want to be in your PJs, in your bedroom. And that's the beautiful thing about this practice. And because it is such a gentle practice, even those sort of more energetic flows that I was talking about, you know, as someone who works with a lot of people who have had horrible injuries over the years, there is nothing that I teach in a fertility yoga practice that I would ever be worried about someone doing on their own. There's no way you could hurt yourself. So that's why I think it has worked so well. It's so gentle and so easy to practice from the comfort of your home.
And you have an online program that people can access, don't you?
Yeah. So I have kind of an online studio, I guess you could call it. So I do classes throughout the week and I do have a program. I have it's kind of like a group coaching program that I open up twice per year, where I open up the doors for a small amount of time because I don't like to work with huge, huge groups. I like to keep the groups quite intimate, and we go through fertility histories and learn about, you know, what you've been through and what your goals are and any other exercise that you want to incorporate into your life. And I write to my students quite detailed programs so they know what to be doing at each phase of their cycle and each day of the week. And then we come together and do breath work and yoga and workshops with other fertility experts. It is awesome, if I do say so myself.
Oh, no, it is. I definitely done some of the online yoga that you've done and I found it very helpful, very calming. And I really enjoyed doing the breath work. I did it in the bath once, so that was nice.
Amazing. I love that, Sian. That's awesome.
I was going to say, where can people find you? Yeah, do tell us how. How do we get there?
Sure. So yeah. If this is all very new to you, what I recommend is a couple of things. I have a free fertility yoga guide that you can access today, and that gives you practices for each phase of your cycle, some meditation work, some breath work, so you can jump in and start using that today. It's a really lovely way to introduce you to the practice, and I'll send you the link to that, Sian. At the end of July this year, I will be running a free 3-day live series where we go into these practices in a little bit more detail live over Zoom, so you can come and ask me all of your questions. We can go through these practices together and I explain how they work as we go. I host those workshops twice per year. So the next one will be at the end of July this year. And I do have a couple of online courses that if people would like to join, they can have a look as well. So if you want to jump onto my website, which I'll give you the link to, then you can see all of those. If you want to come and chat with me, I'm on Instagram and TikTok as well. So I'm always happy. It is always me that responds. I don't have any weird, you know, bots telling you, you know, anything that they shouldn't be. It's always me responding. So would love to hear from you.
Yeah, that's really great. I know your Instagram's Jen Elements Pilates Yoga.
That's it. Thank you.
So do go and have a look. And also your stories are brilliant. So, I mean, do go and have a little look because they can be very validating looking at them and going, yeah, that's what happened to me. Yeah, that is really annoying when someone says that to me. So, yeah.
Thanks, Sian. No, I feel like if we don't have a little bit of a laugh along the way here, we'll just all cry all day, won't we? So
we
have to keep it light sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Oh, well, you know, thank you so much. We've loved talking to you.
Oh, you've got to run a class, haven't you?
At 8 o'clock.
I do. I need to go and meet my students in a few minutes. So I'm going to go and do that. So thank you. It's an honour to speak with you, Sian. Thank you.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you as well. Got to keep. It makes me think I've got to do some yoga now.
Do. We all should.
Well, thank you so much. And I hope you have a lovely rest of your evening.
Thanks, you too.